News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Dalton out today. But I got my friend Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, on the line to talk a little football from over the weekend. And Jim, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Dan.
Let's start with last night. I guess he was in the Senior Bowl. He was a wide receiver at McGill Tulane Catholic High School, and then he went on to the University of South Alabama. Jalen Tolbert, now becoming a real bona fide player with the Cowboys. He scored a touchdown late in that game on a fourth down to get the Cowboys that squeaky win, 20-17.
Yeah, really, really happy for Jalen. He's put so much into it, you know, since his time at McGill. This guy's just worked and worked and worked. So to see him kind of step up and be the number two weapon there for the Cowboys behind CeeDee Lamb, I think talking to Jalen this summer, he played in our Hall of Fame golf tournament, and he said that was his goal. His goal was to, you know, to become the number two guy, and he was sitting behind Brandon Cooks when the season started. He was a longtime vet. And now it looks like he's kind of overpassed him. So really, I mean, that's a huge stage game, having basically a walk-off touchdown with 20 seconds left in front of a national audience and an iconic, you know, game between two, Pittsburgh and Dallas.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, for a kid that grew up in the 70s and 80s, like myself, I mean, that's the two biggest brands in the National Football League. So
they really
cool for Jalen.
They had a few Super Bowls together, right?
Yeah, it seemed like every year they were playing each other in the Super Bowl. But no, it was really cool for Jalen. Really happy for him and his family.
Yeah, and I think that, and your position allows you to kind of get some of the gravy on this stuff. You know, you meet these kids when they're young, and they go on to, in this case, from McGill to South Alabama. So not heavily recruited coming out of high school, but then you really get to know the guy, and at the Senior Bowl, and you. His success, in a way, becomes your success in that you can enjoy it with him.
Yeah, I mean, certainly enjoy it. It's all his. His success is all his, but we do enjoy it with him. And that's the fun part. I just fired off a text to Jalen this morning. We had a kicker in the game a couple years ago, Chad Ryland, who was a fourth-round pick to the Patriots and had a decent rookie year and then struggled at the end, and they cut him. So now he just got signed last week by the Arizona Cardinals, and he hits a game winner yesterday. Really cool locker room celebration with Chad. So I, you know, shot him a text and, you know, told him I was proud of him for you know, kind of getting through a tough time and landing with a new team. So that's always fun. That's always fun, is keeping these connections with these guys and making them feel welcome here back in Mobile if they ever want to come back to for a Hall of Fame event or come back for the week.
That's cool. So let's look at the weekend of college football. It was, I think, when we looked at the weekend, before the weekend unfolded, it was like, nothing to see here. And it turned out there was a few things to see there, beginning up in Nashville.
Yeah, absolutely. It didn't look like a lot of, you know, great matchups, as you said. But man, when it all played out, there were some great games. I know Tide fans don't want to hear about the ones that we're about to talk about. But I got to give it to Vandy and their quarterback. I mean, they really played a good game. I don't feel like Alabama went out and really lost that per se. Vandy just played a great game. And yeah, is there things Alabama wish they did better in plays they wish they had back? Absolutely. I think it's a, you know, kind of look in the mirror morning last couple days for everyone up in Tuscaloosa. But I hate to diminish what those Vandy kids did. They went out and played basically a flawless game in a game that everyone expected them to get blown out. And then the celebration with them tearing down the goalposts and, you know, parading down Broadway in Nashville. I know Tide fans didn't want to see it, but it's just a fan of college football. That's what makes college football so great.
Well, when you're Alabama, you got to live with the bad because the good comes your way so often. It just does. So you have, and that's a long way. Where Vandy is on the west end of Nashville, that's not like they're close to downtown. They carried that thing a long way.
Yeah, no. Nobody feels sorry for Alabama fans. They've enjoyed incredible highs for the last 15 years. it's for the rest of us that are that have allegiances to other schools, welcome to the club.
That's it. It happens.
But but no, that is not a short walk from Vandy campus to down to Broadway. So yeah, I'm sure all those kids had some fun on Saturday night.
So the quarterback for it's an interesting story. Diego Pavia, is that his name? And he is he's a cocksure dude, man. You don't have to, you know, no one's got to pump him up to make him feel good about himself.
No, you know, yeah, he does have a crazy story. He wasn't really recruited out of high school. He went to he went to a junior college. I guess he wasn't even really the guy there. Somehow ended up at New Mexico or New Mexico State. I forget which New Mexico school.
New Mexico State.
Yeah, New Mexico State led them to a good season last year, and now he's in the SEC beating Alabama. So, unbelievable story. He kind of got wrapped up in the moment the other night and probably used a couple choice words he didn't wish, but I just love the emotion. His family was in the stands for it. You know, I actually caught their first game of the year, week one. They beat Va Tech. Yep. And everyone coming into the year, Va Tech was a favorite in the ACC. So that's two huge wins that Vandy's had this year, and that quarterback's responsible for both of them. So yeah, he does not lack for any self confidence. That's for sure.
But that's probably why he's so good. I mean, if he lacks self confidence, that'd be about 80% of his game. He plays like he's an All-American. So with that in mind, how good a player is he? And would you consider him for the Senior Bowl?
Well, we'll evaluate him just like we would anyone else. But I mean, right now I'd say it's a real stretch for him to be here in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. It's just we have too many quarterbacks graded above him. But in terms of, you know, I mean, shoot, I always look at it like if he were my son, how proud I would be of that kid and what he's done so far to have two massive wins, you know, to his credit, playing in the SEC, overcoming the odds. I mean, again, he's an underdog, and you never count those guys out. So, I mean, shoot, could he go play in the UFL, you know, the spring league for a year or two and end up in the NFL someday just because of how he's wired? I'm sure he thinks he can play in the NFL, which that's half the battle.
Yep.
So, no, that's a cool story.
There is an under-the-radar, I guess, Senior Bowl players. Among them would be this running back out of Boise State. I don't even have his name in front of me. That's how underrated he is. I can't just tell you his name, but talk about him, what kind of season he's having, and what kind of player he is.
Yeah, Dan, his name's Ashton Jeanty. Unbelievable. The numbers he's putting up right now, we haven't seen for a long, long time. You put him up against the last couple Heisman Trophy winning running backs, Derrick Henry being one of them. And he's blowing their numbers out of the water. He's already over 1,000 yards. He's averaging 10 yards a carry. And yes, it's in the Mountain West Conference, but he did it against a good Oregon team, you know, a team that's ranked in the top 10. He ran all over them. He's super talented. I watched him this summer. He's our top graded running back coming into the year. And now, you know, quite frankly, Dan, I'm worried we're even going to be able to get him here to Mobile the way he's playing. Just because that position, there's so much wear and tear on that position. I hope he ends up with an agent that, you know, kind of explains to him what the value of the Senior Bowl and connecting with these NFL decision makers. Because right now he's shown so much on the field. I mean, this kid's phenomenal. The guy that I compared him to over the summer with our staff when I watched him, he reminded me, this is lofty praise. I'm not trying to put this guy in Canton, Ohio already, but he reminded me of LaDainian Tomlinson when I watched him this summer. I mean, this guy he was on our Senior Bowl 75th anniversary team last year. LaDainian was, and one of the all-time greats. I mean, this kid is super talented. And again, I wish I knew he was going to have a big year. I didn't want him to have this big a year. you know, when they do the Heisman thing in December, and whoever the finalists are, I mean, if that kid's not in New York, that'll be a travesty. He's certainly one of the top three or four college football players in the country right now.
You know, the ever-changing world of college football, and it is changing by the hour, it seems like. And now you've got the players being compensated for NIL, which is kind of a farce in itself. But and you also have players making business decisions, such as, explain what's going on with Bear Alexander out in at USC and him deciding to stop playing after three games, allowing him to redshirt and then move on.
Yeah, Bear is a former five-star kid. We've been watching his tape over the last couple of years. He certainly doesn't look like a five-star on his college tape that he's put out so far. I got a real problem with this, Dan. I mean, again, if you just look at this young man's resume, the NFL is going to be scratching their heads. And again, he's not like a slam dunk NFL player right now anyway. He looks like a late round pick in the tape that we've watched, if that. But now he's been at seven. He's going to be at seven schools in 8 years going back to high school.
Mm-hmm.
That's a major red flag.
Yep.
You know, I mean, so, you know, this kid, he's never been happy anywhere, or his people have never been happy anywhere, whoever's making these decisions for him. But if his goal is to someday play in the NFL, he's really putting that in jeopardy. It's one thing for these guys to, you know, transfer once, or maybe in a unique situation, maybe transfer twice. But beyond that, I mean, just play ball, you know, like,
yep,
find a place where you can play and play football. So, yeah, and he's not the only one. We talked about it a couple weeks ago with the quarterback from UNLV, made a similar decision. You know, you can't play more than four games and keep your red shirt. So it's happened multiple times over the last couple weeks where players are, you know, are off to a good start. Or as a pass rusher at Texas State in the Sun Belt, one of South Alabama's common opponents. And he got off to a good start. I think he had 3.5 sacks in the first three games. He decided to shut it down and shop himself to bigger schools.
Amazing.
For next year. So it's just, yeah, I mean, again, I'm great with players getting compensated. I've got zero issue with that. But some of the other stuff, some of the peripheral stuff that's happening in college football right now, it just feels kind of gross to me.
Do you remember there was a player, I don't want to get into the name at all, but there was a player at St. Paul's that talked about that years ago. He was going to play at Alabama. I think he eventually did. But there was talk of him, like, shutting it down his senior year at St. Paul's. This was years ago, too, and Nick Saban got the message to him, if you don't play, you're not coming here. So it was almost to protect his athletic talent and ability and not get injured. And Saban told him quickly, if you don't play, the scholarship's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember that, mm-hmm, Dan, but it certainly sounds like something that has happened probably more than just in this one instance. And again, if you're Nick Saban or if you're these NFL teams, I mean, you want guys that love football. I mean, Dan, that's a huge part of the pitch for the Senior Bowl, right? Is, you know, a lot of these kids, you know, their agents and their families feel like they've done enough at the college level. They've shown enough. Why would you come play in the Senior Bowl? I mean, to me, I tell them, you're all making a statement. All these NFL teams are doing in the pre-draft process is trying to figure out who really loves football.
Right.
Because if everything goes right, similar to like Jalen Tolbert right now, like if everything goes right, Jalen didn't make generational wealth for his family off the rookie contract. Not many of these guys do. So, you know, when these teams do pay them, you know, $50 million, $100 million, the teams want to know that they're still going to go out there and compete and play their tails off. You know, so you've got to find guys that really love football and take advantage of every opportunity to compete. And so guys like that are trying to opt out their senior or high school to preserve themselves, or guys that don't come play in the Senior Bowl, I mean, to me, that just raises a lot of red flags, whether it be for Nick Saban or for an NFL team.
Hey, Jim, tell people where they can see what you guys are up to social media-wise, and it's never too early to buy some tickets.
No, never too early, not at all. We had our first sellout in a long time last year, Dan, so I appreciate you bringing that up.
Sure.
Yeah, SeniorBowl.com. It's easier than ever right now to get tickets. It's not like the old days where you had to come down to the Senior Bowl office and pick up your paper ticket. Just go on SeniorBowl.com on your laptop or your phone and get your tickets. You know, we're coming off our best year in a long time, and we're going to have some good local players in the game and a lot of good Tide and Auburn players and high draft picks, so it'll be fun. And then, yeah, to follow us on social media, either at Senior Bowl at Twitter, or I've got a social media myself, at Jim Nagy _SB, and everything we do, we post on there. If you want to be in tune with the Senior Bowl, we are posting multiple times a day, and it'll help you really kind of feel like you're in our office with us.
Appreciate our Monday conversations, Jim. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Have a great week.
Sir, Jim Nagy is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. It's 8:21 now, Mobile Mornings. Dan and Sean in for Dalton this morning. Morning from Dan and Sean in for Dalton this morning. FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:25. Our show Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along. And we are dealing with, well, not us personally here, but somebody in the Southeast are dealing with what happened with Helene and dealing with it best they can with, it would appear, limited national resources or response. And now here comes Milton. And unlike Helene, which hit, you know, an area, the coastline that happened to be more sparsely in terms of population, this is not going to be that. So we got to get ready for what's going to happen with Milton on the way. And, of course, a lot of chatter about Helene still in terms of where's the FEMA presence, why the people are not getting helped with FEMA, yeah, Red Cross,
etc. What are you going to do when you have another storm?
What are you going to do now?
Right here on the heels.
So, you're chatting, I know, with some people
back and forth. A lot of people on the text line. Listen, I heard all the conspiracies over the weekend. I point out that I think there's a lot more omission than commission when these things come up. You know, the theories range from they're not responding to the Western North Carolina and places like that because of the lithium deposits and the government wants to take over the land. Listen, the lithium mining there went on well before this storm. I don't follow that one. I know that disappoints some people. The other people saying that they're engineering weather and making these storms hit, you know, and putting them in red states and stuff. I mean, come on. Now is there weather manipulation probably beyond what we understand beyond just seeding rainfall? Sure. I'm going to go out on a limb here and tell you I don't believe that they are steering storms. Now, what I do see is the failure of government to be able to react quickly. Mm-hmm. And this has gone on, like, it's not just here. I mean, you look at, people say, Katrina response. Heck, look at the flooding in Louisiana that brought on the Cajun Navy. The flooding in Houston that brought on the Cajun Navy. Mm-hmm. When groups have organized to fill in where government can't. And you got groups like Samaritan's Purse, Operation Airdrop now. People working, I was talking about this throughout the show. A buddy of mine who's a lineman is down, not even in the mountains. He's down in southeast Georgia. And the devastation he sees down there. And he says, and this is a guy that's been doing it for decades. And so I, you know, appreciate his opinion on it. I said, who are you seeing there with a storm response? And he says, he's not. He said, he's not seeing, he said, I haven't seen the Red Cross, National Guard, or any government agency here. He said, I see churches, local volunteers from other states, but not any of the organized groups. Now, on top of this, then, you're going to have another storm, and that response is going to be needed. Jason on the text line said, Sean, your thoughts on weather modification. I don't recall these kind of storms starting in the Gulf, and now we have multiple. I hate to go full Ricky, but it seems fishy to me. And by the way, Jason, Ricky has gone full Ricky already this morning.
Yeah, Ricky's full Ricky. We got enough Ricky from Ricky.
But these storms starting in the Gulf, this happens at the end of the, you know, the bookend of the hurricane season. We get storms that start in the Gulf. At the beginning and the end, you get localized. You'd still get Atlantic, but, you know, the peak of the season is based on those big storms coming across Atlantic. But here on the tail end, we get lots of storms that form in the Gulf. And people saying, I've never seen anything like this, the number of two storms forming in the Gulf. 2005, y'all. 2005. You had Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you had Rita. Then you had, now Katrina formed out, it came across the Atlantic and came through. But then you had Rita. Then you had Cindy. You had Emily. You had Wilma. Remember, they had to go to the Greek alphabet. Because they ran out of names in 2005. So now, is this something worth talking about? Yes. Is it unprecedented? No, we've had seasons like this before.
Well, we got up to Zeta.
Yeah.
A couple years ago.
Yep.
So that's Z, by the way. 8:30 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. More on what Dr. Bill had to say about Milton earlier this morning. That's coming up. Sean in for Dalton this morning, 8:34 on Mobile Mornings. Very good to have you along every day. I talk to so many of you that do listen each and every morning. And we appreciate that a whole lot. Sean Sullivan's got his own show in the middle of the day. Now, he used to do three shows, but he just got lazy.
Yes, that's right.
So he would do three shows.
Yeah.
He would do this show. He would do Midday Mobile, which he still does.
Yeah.
And then you'd do something in the afternoon,
the drive,
like 5 o'clock?
Yeah, the drive. Yeah, that's been years, yeah. So
that was insane.
Yeah, it was. But, hey, I was
Did you know it at the time that it was?
That's what needed done. You know, people say, why do you do three shows a day? I said, I'm already paid for. That's starting this business, I was already paid for. By the way, heads up, too. I hope to see y'all out tonight back again. I don't know why they let David Holloway and I do anything together. Of course, you know, David used to be the food editor for the paper, one of the funnier men I know. He and I are some of the judges tonight at the Alabama Wildlife Federation's Wild Game Cook-Off down at the Bluegill. I think the doors open, we've got to be there early because we've got to judge, but I think the doors open at 6 or 6:30 at the Bluegill. Just go to AWF online, Alabama Wildlife Federation. But yeah, we're back judging y'all's wild game recipes.
Okay.
So we'll sit there and they give us, you know, you sit in a little judge's thing. They give you a little cup of, you know, and it's called the whatever, you know, you'll have seafood and then you'll have wild game. You know, have people do creative things with it. People do basic things with it. But it's a lot of fun. And it's good to see everybody, all the booths out there, all the cooking teams out there at the AWF event. It's always a good visit. So we'll see y'all there this afternoon. And yes, there's a bunch of great judges. And then there's David Holloway and I. So
yeah, well, no, but I'll tell you what. David Holloway, I think we've talked about this. He's one of the most engaging people on radio in Mobile. He's
absolutely
one of the funniest. I mean,
that's why we're not allowed to be together.
Yeah.
He's a highly entertaining guy.
Yes.
And, but then they keep us back there. Like, we judge back in a room, like the back room there at the Bluegill. They keep it the secret judging area.
Yeah. Keep you away.
Yes. So we can't be influenced.
Tell David I said hello. I didn't know he was still around town.
I'm not going to encourage him with a... Love that guy. So it'll be fun tonight. Hopefully y'all can come out and check that out. So many of the text here, too. Somebody had said this. This one from unnamed texter said, I remember the Russian collusion conspiracy theory. Absolutely. I'm with you. People are saying that because I doubt that they're steering the storms, and because I doubt the trying to run people off their property so they can do the lithium mining, because there's like all these things, there are facts there. There absolutely are lithium deposits there. There's absolutely mining issues there. I don't think they steered the storms to try to get the people off their property so they could get it. I mean, it's like a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah, it sounds
to get the. But at the same time, there are plenty of things that are I'm talking about a whole bunch, and I don't want to mute those voices. You know, that's the whole thing with the Biden administration telling Facebook, you know, we're not telling you what to do, but we'll make you aware of, you know, so many things around COVID that turned out to be true,
sure,
that they were saying were misinformation. Now FEMA's coming out, pushing out their what's misinformation about this storm. So believe me, the doubt in the official narrative from the government, I'm with y'all. I'm just looking at it critically, not by what government's telling me, but I'm just using critical thinking on that one. But I do look at what I'm seeing as omission more than commission. Once again, a failing of government to make the response. And my worry is, then you have another storm coming in right behind it. How are they gonna do it? And you have private groups coming in. And by the way, you can do the donation. Superbomb on Friday challenged FM Talk 106.5 listeners to do a $10, or if you can do more, donation to Samaritan's Purse and Operation Airdrop. Those links are up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. I've engaged in the same thing, given to those folks. Remember, Cajun Navy folks used to come on the show with me. We'd talk about what their efforts were. There's always great people filling in and helping out, but that is... You know, that's private people doing it, not government. And I've seen it over time, whether it be flooding in Houston or in Louisiana. Remember the horrible floods near Zachary, Louisiana, which I was there, right by there on Saturday. Got on a college football weekend, which I don't want to talk about. I got roped into going to a wedding in Louisiana. But been these
big... That's weak, man.
It was bad. I was that guy at the wedding with the phone, with the audio, and watching I was that guy. And then I got further and further depressed during the wedding after that game unfolded the way it did. But
private groups are good, I think, at the acute response, fast, and then the government's supposedly going to come in
the larger,
for the longer term.
Yeah.
But they're called the Federal Emergency Management Agency, not long-term care. Remember a story, gosh, 10, 12 years ago doing the show, and we had a snowstorm in D.C., and they shut the FEMA offices down. I said, wait, can't FEMA stay open when there's a snowstorm?
I forgot about that.
But the on-the-ground things, you know, I mentioned texting with my buddy who's a lineman, and he's not even in the mountainous area. He's in southeast Georgia. And so we were texting back and forth last night as he finally, after dark, gets a second to lay his head down there in the truck working. And I was asking what he was seeing near Hazelhurst, Georgia, where they were working. And they're Vidalia, Hazelhurst. I think they may go to Augusta later on this week. And I said, who are you seeing? With the response, he said, I have not seen. And this is a guy who's been doing it for 30-some-odd years, so he's not new to working storm recovery.
Yeah.
Haven't seen the Red Cross, National Guard, or any government agency. None.
And
he's been there since they deployed right after the storm. So, I mean, there you go. That's just fail. That's a failure. And then that clip we played earlier of Biden saying the people in the storm-affected areas were happy. With what? Really?
He said they're getting what they need. They're very happy. If I remember the exact quote, it started out, he was confused by the question, or you had, I don't know, did you have some noise in the background that was affecting him, understanding exactly what the reporter was asking? I can't even remember, but he was a little dazed, and then his response
was storms. I'm trying to figure out what storm
do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, the storm you just came from, or the damage you just came from.
Now, Greg on the text line said, it's really incredible how we've dodged so many big bullets. Easy, Greg. You know, now I have to throw salt over my shoulder or whatever. He said, it's incredible how we've dodged so many big bullets recently, Sally being a real pain, but definitely not a cat. Four or five. He said it's kind of like, and then what I talked about earlier, responded to Jason, he said it's kind of like Katrina backed right up to Rita. Luckily, Rita hit the Texas-Louisiana border. But we had that year in 2005, had storm after storm out there.
We did. We did. And so let me ask you this, just on the, you're going back to conspiracy theories and our mistrust of institutions, probably like, I don't know, it doesn't remind me of any other time. Like, oh, I remember when we mistrusted this one.
Well, you got to remember after Katrina, and Bush said, you're doing a great job, Brownie, for the response, and then he got eviscerated for that.
He did. So Zuckerberg's letter to Congress about the pressure that Meta was put under by the Biden administration, he sent that letter, I believe, to Jim Jordan.
Yeah. He said everything that I said on the air 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but yes, confirmed.
So obviously a little late, right? And obviously some of the headlines were enormous back in the day. It's not even apologies, but when some of the New York Times et cetera said, you know what, we kind of got that wrong. You had to dig in to find that one on page 27.
What is the old little rhyme? The reaction to the retraction of the reaction to the action is never. But I'll figure it out. There's a little rhyme to it. Like you could put, you know, your when in the paper or print they come out and say something was wrong. It never gets once a headline splashes.
Then people
believe that, and then the retraction. It's like the reaction to the retraction never has the action of the initial. I remember it at some point.
And so anyway, he has declared himself somewhere in that letter. He was saying, like, look, I'm going to be down the middle now. That's just the way it's going to be.
Because he's pretty sure Trump's going to get elected, and he doesn't want to suffer.
That could be it. He's playing his cards. We've got Dr. Bill from earlier this morning talking about Milton. Here's some of that conversation.
Yeah, this one right now is just northwest of the Yucatan Peninsula. And the highest winds right now, 100 miles per hour around the center of Hurricane Milton. It is moving to the east-southeast in the direction of Yucatan, but it will be moving more to the east and then to the northeast through the day. And it will continue to intensify. It should become a major hurricane by this afternoon. It will then turn more to the northeast and then head toward the Florida Peninsula, moving across the eastern portion of the Gulf for tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, it will approach the western side of the Florida Peninsula. And the likely target right now would be around Sarasota, possibly St. Petersburg and Tampa. But it's going to go into a very populated area. And that will occur late Wednesday. So most likely Wednesday evening it would make landfall, and it could very well follow Interstate 4, which is the big corridor from Tampa, St. Petersburg, up to Orlando. And it could possibly follow that track all the way across Florida on Thursday, and then move out into the Atlantic around Cape Canaveral. And it will lose some strength, of course, over Florida, but not a lot. No mountains to encounter. And it will go out into the Atlantic and be a minimal hurricane, and then become a most likely a tropical storm, and just simply head out to the east toward Bermuda. So big land area that it's going to cover would be the Florida Peninsula and right through that very populated central area.
And Dr. Bell, looking at what they saw along that area from Tampa north, you know, Cedar Key, like you talked about, from Helene with storm surge, is it similar with Milton, or what levels would they expect there along that west coast of Florida?
Well, this case, the it's going to be from Tampa down through Sarasota to Fort Myers. They're going to get the brunt of the storm surge. It's very possible that the highest winds of this storm, when it reaches the coast, could be upwards of 140, 145 miles per hour. So it'll be a Category 4. And that's going to be the real danger for the storm surge, although before it reaches that coast, the surge will build even north of Tampa. But this is going to be a populated area as opposed to the Big Bend and Cedar Key, which is not a heavily populated area. But with that Tampa Bay being a nice big cove there, that's where you're going to see likely a very high storm surge. And it's most likely going to be a double-digit type of storm surge and 10 feet or more. But we'll have a better fix on that once that storm starts to move in the northwest easterly direction. And but if it does go into that area with all those coves, those bays along the west coast, we're in for a serious problem.
But before hurricane season, in early May, Dr. Bill, as we started hurricane season, I guess May the 15th officially, he was you know, he wasn't in a laughing mood about some of the projections about this hurricane season, how active it could be. We went a long while without anything that was going to strike us, for sure. But things have picked up, which tends to happen. We're past the midway point. Well, that was the middle of September.
Sometimes it does.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it's.
But it definitely has picked up in the second half from September on this year.
Nita's saying on the text line, maybe with the storm rolling through like it did, these people who voted Democrat before will think twice about voting Democrat this time, seeing how they spent all the money on other countries and trying to prosecute Trump to the point where they can't even help out their own citizens in a time of need. Larry and Atmore talking about following. Yeah, Greg Biffle on X, you know, on Twitter. Leanna got me following him last week, Larry, and he's really been a good follow. He's one of the guys, you know, Greg Biffle, when he's not racing cars, which, by the way, they had a huge pileup for NASCAR over the weekend. But when he's not racing cars, you find helicopters using his personal helicopter to save lives and drop off those Starlinks, which have been donated, I think it's 300 I read the other day by Musk. I imagine it's going to end up being more than that, but good for them. This texter, it's U-Haul Man. Thank you, U-Haul Man. Said our country can construct a $300 million floating pier on the opposite side of the globe, yet struggle to rescue our own citizens with the largest aircraft fleet in the world. Lisa says, what I find frustrating is that FEMA has already announced that they are out of funds, and the families that have lost everything only receive $750, far less than the illegal immigrants receive. Our military is overseas instead of here, shoring up our own communities, and we continue to send billions to Ukraine. What's wrong with this picture?
Everything. And I think what really...
That's what I think is the issue here versus some... You know, there's a plan to get the lithium and get the people out. I think that, what Lisa, there it is. It's the failure of allocating resources properly.
Doubled up with illegal immigrants who are being, FEMA money's going there.
What are your
money's for?
You show me what you spend money on, you show me what your values are.
Mm-hmm. And you show me, evidently, a plan. Well, it's not even a plan. They've flooded this country with 9, 10, 12. What's the number
of... It's not that I even think they said, we're going to give the money to illegal immigrants so we can't give it to regular Americans.
No.
It's that their priority
right.
is this versus shoring up and having the resources and ready to go for Americans. It's not like they went, I'm going to do this so I don't do this. It's, I'm not going to pay attention to that because this is what I want to pay attention to.
And why? So what's the motivation that settle all these illegal immigrants in the United States. And I was listening to a podcast over the weekend, and maybe I'll have some of that audio for us tomorrow. For Trump to undo what has been done, Sean, largely impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, these countries don't have to take anybody back. We don't send people back to Mexico that are Chinese or Venezuelan. Mexico's like, don't send them our way. So in any event, I'll probably bring some of that audio with us tomorrow so you can see that, again, things are not going to be undone anytime soon, regardless of who wins the election in November. It is 8:51 on FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dan and Sean in for Dalton, and we'll try to get to James here on the way. Dan and Sean in for Dalton, and he'll be back with Midday Mobile coming up at noon today. James the Engineer with some thoughts on who's not at these sites that have been struck by and affected by the hurricane. James, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to mention first, you know, people talking about the conspiracy theory thing with storms. But in 1916, if I'm not incorrect, y'all might want to research this, but they believe there were two hurricanes, or a hurricane and a tropical depression, come right into Mobile Bay. The damage was immense. They claim the water was 4 foot high at the loop area, all over.
Wow.
All right, and that so, you know, and here we are with the serious thing about probable steering storms. The jet stream moves from west to east. The temperatures are getting cooler. It's dropping down. It's forcing the storm to go to the east because it's a stronger right now because of the mass and the cooler air dropping down.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks.
All right. Now, as far as we practice as engineers, combat engineer and or engineers, this is something they're trained to do is go into a situation like this right here. You acclimate four-wheel drives. You load these up in the military helicopters. You get generators. They already now have a process. They've advanced further than what it was when I was in, where they can filter that brown water and take every bit of the sediment and everything out. You're drinking fresh water. They can set up mass units. If they don't hurry up and do it, the other thing they're going to be dealing with is the extreme temperature drop here in November, about the middle of November, in the northern states.
Yep.
They're not even realizing that.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, James, and pointing out some of the things as an engineer, and I guess a former military, an engineer in the military, that he's seeing and saying, why are these things not in place or being activated right now?
This brings up, we don't have time for this, but yeah, maybe we'll bounce this around after we get through the actual things happening with another storm coming in. But you saw it in Puerto Rico, a discussion after, I forget which, I mean, hurricane really hit them hard.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm interested in this because I like solar, I like off-grid, I like self-sustainability. That's my, you know, one of the things I'm interested in. In Puerto Rico, they said, hey, why don't, when we rebuild, we don't go back into the old line of linking everything together in a grid, right? Because, you know, with the grid, something happens down the street, your power might be, but because it got knocked out down the street. And I don't know where they ended up, but there was a discussion of, could they, when they went back to rebuild, not have everything so on the same bigger grid? Solar generator systems that split it up, balkanized it more, so when there was damage, it didn't affect
more
as
localized.
Many people at one time.
Yeah, more localized.
Yeah. So,
wonder if they did that.
I'll hit up that Google box and see.
Jeff Ford is on the way next on FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton or Sean back with you in the morning beginning at 6 a.m.